couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. This show, we've got, it's kind of a violent show today, actually. We've got movies like Pompeii, that's the one with the volcano. Spoiler alert, there's a volcano in Pompeii. There's also 3 Days to Kill, just, that's violent in its title. There's also going to be talk about In Secret and The Wind Rises. I'm going to be talking about some movie news. I've got superhero and sci-fi movies, some casting news, a highly anticipated trailer that dropped this week and kind of, you know, set the internet on fire. That will be part of the trailer park. There's also a little bit of listener feedback and a very small DVD roundup, but a whole goodles of news and some interesting stuff happening in the cinematic world behind the scenes. Before I start talking about all that, let me tell you how to get a hold of me. If you want to email, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. If we get one, we'll play it on the air and, you know, get your voice heard. You get that small measure of fame, which is a better than a slap in the belly with a wet trout. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com, on facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies, or twitter.com/KevinCarr. That's the place you want to go if you want to yell at me and make fun of me and berate me and then see if I can block you. I really don't do that all that often. But every now, you know, I have had to block people a couple times. Just because people, you know, you run into people like this where they don't take no for an answer. They can't take that something's your opinion and they got to argue and belabor the point. If you really want that, get your own radio show. And then you can just spout out your opinion to everybody you want. That's what I do.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
That sound means that it's time to talk about the news. And what's interesting is Ron Burgundy introducing a story about Ron Burgundy. Anchorman 2 is actually going to be re-released. I know it just came out in December, right before Christmas. Did really well, and it's right around $125 million, which is fantastic for that film, considering the first film didn't make that much. It made decent money, but it didn't make much money overseas. This has topped it already. Which, you know, I don't know, it's been almost 10 years between the first movie and this movie. Are they going to make it Anchorman 3? Probably not. It would take them another 10 years. But they're making a, I guess you can call it an Anchorman 2.5. They're recutting the movie and replacing every joke. With 700 new jokes are going to be in this. It's actually coming out next week as a re-release. What's funny is this kind of made a little bit of news because some people are criticizing this and saying, well, hey, this is unnecessary. Why are you just re-releasing something that just came out 2 months ago? The difference here is this is nothing new for Anchorman. If you go back to the first movie, they had their theatrical cut, which was PG-13, and then they released the unrated cut on DVD, which included a very profanity-laden scene. It was sort of like that scene in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles where they dropped the F-bomb like 512 times. There's a scene in the unrated cut of Anchorman that's in there, and that's what would have given it an R rating. They also released an alternate cut of the movie, all with different, 90% of the movie was different. The film was basically the same story, but you got a very different movie, and that's because of the nature of it being an improv comedy and that sort of thing. They're doing the same thing with Anchorman 2, only they're putting it in theaters. And that's, I think that's kind of cool. I don't know whether I'm going to get a chance to see it. I'm going to try and see it and talk about it on the show next week if the schedule permits. But I'm all for that. I think when you have a movie that's so heavily improvised, having that sort of linorama version of the film, that's kind of cool. I'm okay with that. So yeah, something to look forward to next week. Anchorman 2 getting re-released with 700 new jokes and basically a completely different cut of the film with the same things going on. The next piece of news is the Terminator franchise has found their new Kyle Reese. And this is so depressing because the last movie, Terminator Salvation, was just freaking terrible. It was nonsensical, didn't really make a whole lot of logical sense, and it was just boring and stupid. Mick G just completely, you know, dumped all over that franchise. They've now decided to reboot it, and they've cast Jay Courtney as Kyle Reese. Now, if you don't know who that guy is, he's the guy from the last Die Hard movie, playing John McClane's son. He was also the shooter in that Tom Cruise, Jack Reacher film. He's basically Sam Worthington all over again. The most boring guy on screen. He's a good looking dude and he can kind of do action and he's fit, almost as fit as me, but he's just boring. And I think they're cut from the same cloth. This, to me, is just another disaster waiting to happen. The next piece of casting news I want to talk about, Fantastic Four, the reboot of Fantastic Four, directed by Josh Trank, who did Chronicle. That has finally announced who the new Fantastic Four is going to be. It's a younger cast. You've got Miles Teller as Reed Richards. He was the guy from The Spectacular Now, and most recently, That Awkward Moment. Kate Mara from House of Cards is going to play Sue Storm, the Invisible Woman. Jamie Bell from Billy Elliot and various other things is going to play Ben Grimm or The Thing, which is that's the ones that's sort of more fascinating to me, because Jamie Bell's not an imposing figure. I'm assuming it's all going to be CGI, sort of like The Hulk, which I kind of liked the old The Thing, the suited Thing from Tim Story's version. I confession time. I love the Tim Story movies. I thought they were fun. And I know a lot of Marvel fanboys think I'm stupid for that. But anyways, that's the way it is. Michael B. Jordan from That Awkward Moment, from Fruitvale Station and from Chronicle, he is going to be playing Johnny Storm. This is a bit dicey simply because I've heard some people complaining because Michael B. Jordan's black, and they're like, you can't have a black Johnny Storm. I'm like, why can't, part of the reasoning being is Sue Storm and Johnny Storm are brother and sister. My question is, why do you have a white person playing Sue Storm? Why not have a black actress play Sue Storm? Or you can just make an adopted. Who cares? Race isn't really that big of an issue in this. It's a superhero movie. Let's have some fun with it. That sound means that we're ready to move into the trailer park. We've got two movies to talk about. The first one is opening on June 20th, and that is The Purge: Anarchy.
No, this can't be happening. No one's going to help us tonight.
This is your emergency broadcast system announcing the commencement of the annual purge. At the siren, all crime, including murder, will be legal for 12 hours. All emergency services will be suspended. Your government thanks you for your participation.
The first purge I was not terribly impressed with. I thought it was an interesting concept. But the concepts breaks down when you actually start thinking beyond the very, just very specific plot of the film. This movie looks very much like Quarantine 2. It looks kind of direct to video. It doesn't look like it's going to be as good. It looks like it's now turning into just an excuse to have violence. And the social commentary seems to be lacking, or it's going to be completely gone from this film. I think this one's going to be kind of a bust. It's probably a cheap movie to make. It'll probably make money. The goodwill that The Purge had, I guess it's a weird way of saying it, might carry over, but overall, I'm not looking forward to this film. The next one I am looking forward to, this thing set the internet on fire. The Guardians of the Galaxy trailer dropped this week, and this is James Gunn's adaptation of sort of Marvel 2.0. This is a lesser known group of superheroes in the future, and well, let's just play the clip. Here it is.
Who are you?
Star-Lord.
Who?
Star-Lord, man. Legendary outlaw? Forget it.
We arrested these five on Xandar. Check out the rap sheets. They call themselves the Guardians of the Galaxy.
What a bunch of a-holes.
This movie looks fantastic. I love James Gunn's work. I think he's very out of the box. Although I have to say this, I get a real Scott Pilgrim feel from the reaction to this. If you remember, Scott Pilgrim versus the World was a movie that was hyperbolically loved by fanboys and comic book geeks alike. They considered it the greatest movie of that year, and it just failed to reach a mainstream audience. And while this trailer looks really cool, I am a little bit nervous about it simply because this could fall flat. There's a reason it's coming out in August. I don't hope they're not pinning the hopes of the Marvel Cinematic Universe on this movie. Not a whole lot of recognizable names or even faces in the trailers. Just because it has a talking raccoon in it doesn't mean it's necessarily going to be this crossover hit. I hope for success for this film. I think it looks good, but I'm a little nervous that there's so much fanboy anticipation. For as cool as the movie's going to be, it might be a little bit underperforming compared to what people are setting it up to be. I have to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about In Secret and The Wind Rises. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's move on into the meat of the show, the movie reviews. We're going to hit the limited release stuff first. The smaller movies that you may or may not see in your local theater. Might take a week or two to get there, but they are opening somewhat wide. The first one is a release by Roadside Attractions. It's in about 260 theaters across the country, which is enough for larger cities to see, but you might have to wait a little bit for the smaller towns. This is In Secret. And the story is a young French woman is manipulated by her family and turns to drastic and violent measures to escape her oppressive life.
We're moving to Paris. We can leave right after the wedding.
Oh, whose wedding are we going to?
Well, yours, dear.
Mother, I brought you a present. You must remember Laurent.
Yes! Oh, little Laurent.
You can stay, can't you?
I would love to stay.
You have secrets from me.
If only he'd go away.
People don't just go away.
Not if the going away is an accident.
I can't stand on being with you.
This one stars Elizabeth Olsen, who made a huge splash a couple years ago with Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene, and has done... She's the one Olsen girl who went into the independent cred movies. She's not... She didn't do, like, the Olsen twin stuff. She's the other Olsen girl who has a lot of credibility behind her. It also stars Jessica Lange, who's hot off of Emmy Awards for American Horror Story. Also stars Tom Felton. You might recognize him as Draco Malfoy from the Harry Potter films. And Oscar Isaac, who is in Inside Llewyn Davis award consideration for this year. Now, the film is not my cup of tea. I'm just going to just get that out there. It is a very slow-moving, heavy, grim, and often gray and dark and depressing drama. It takes a while to get into the story. And it starts out as just being the story of her oppressive life. Her mother dies when she's a young girl, and her father drops her off with his sister-in-law because he doesn't know what to do with a young girl. And she lives in this very oppressive life where she's kind of forced to marry Tom Felton character, who's this sickly version. I still couldn't quite figure out how they were related, but I guess they are. And then she starts having an affair when they move to Paris. She's a very hypersexual character, especially for the time it takes place. And they turn to some drastic measures. It gets very dark about halfway through, and it gets pretty grim in terms of the subject matter, which I kind of like because it went from being this sort of weepy, soap opery, Victorian era French movie to being a little bit more, having a little more meat to it, a little bit of skullduggery taking a place. And when it gets to that point, it gets interesting. When bad things start to happen, it gets interesting. The problem is it sort of loses sight of what it was setting the movie up to be. Because her family, the people taking care of her, are awful, horrible people. They're stealing her inheritance. They're forcing her into a marriage that's just really creepy beyond just being something she doesn't want. And she has no freedom. So then when she tries to assert herself, and then suddenly they become the victim. And not to justify what she does in the movies. That's based on a play, which is based on a book. But even though it's not justifying any of the actions that take place, when you go back and revisit what happens earlier in the movie, you think, you know what? Maybe the people that bad things are happening to kind of deserve this. And I don't know if it's trying to make a moral message or if it's just meant to be depressing. It works on a certain level. It's well acted. It's at least artistically done. I'm going to give this one a kind of rocks, simply because it's good enough for what it was. Like I said, not my cup of tea, not something I'm necessarily going to want to sit through, but it's an interesting enough film on its own.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie we're going to be talking about is The Wind Rises. This is Hayao Miyazaki's, supposedly his last film, but he's retired before in the past. He's sort of like the Japanese anime version of Cher, who's kind of like a Japanese anime character anyways in her own right. But Hayao Miyazaki has made this movie, and here's what it's about. Inspired by the Italian designer Cabrini, a young Japanese man becomes one of the most famous aeronautic designers in history.
Which world will you choose?
I just want to create beautiful airplanes.
Like that? Very graceful.
I have a long way to go. I don't even have an engine or a cockpit yet.
Bravo! A beautiful dream.
There's a little bit of controversy I just want to address initially with this, because the story itself is about Hiro Horikoshi, I think is how you say his name. The thing with his character is he designed some of the planes that were most successful in the Japanese theater with World War II. And in fact, it's not about the plane he designs in this movie, but one of the planes he designs are the ones that actually attacked Pearl Harbor. So this has gotten a little bit of controversy there when it first came out, the Japanese version. This is the English dub version, which is opening very limited this week, expanding next week. Here's the thing. It's not glorifying Japanese imperialism or Japanese military or even the violence. It takes a regretful tone that the planes, which they address as an artistic thing, are being used for violent measures. It walks a very thin line on that, because it doesn't say, it shows the beauty in flight and the beauty in the design. And that's a wonderful thing. And it regretfully sort of hangs its head and is like, unfortunately, these are used to kill people too. And that's the way it is with any piece of technology. And it's this young man's love for aeronautics that drives him to do what he does. It just happens to be he works and lives in a country at the time which was waging a war and was very imperialistic and militaristic. But you know what? It's still a beautiful movie. It really, really is. And partly because of that, not just because it's beautifully animated in the traditional Studio Ghibli Hayao Miyazaki style, which is gorgeous on its own right. It's a sweet, tender story about, it's a man's love affair with his art. And that is what makes the movie so well done. It's a mature movie. And Miyazaki's done more mature films, but he's a little bit more well known for doing not kids movies, because even his movies for kids, like My Neighbor Totoro and Nausicaa and Parent Princess Mononoke and Ponyo, these are relatable to children, because they live in the fantastic. But they're also very mature movies. This one takes away a lot of that fantastic fantasy element and makes it a grown-up movie. It's a drama, and that's something that the Japanese do that really Americans don't do, is they use the animation venue to tell grown-up stories. And they're not limited by, oh, it's a cartoon, ergo, it must be a kid's movie. That seems to be a stigma that's attached. I don't know if it's attached in other countries. It's definitely attached in America. That if it's a cartoon, if it's animated, especially if it's hand-drawn animated, like 2D cells, it's considered subpar from grown-up entertainment. The Wind Rises is a beautiful movie. It's up for an Oscar. I don't think it's going to win. I think Frozen's going to win. But it's still a gorgeous movie to check out if you at all like Japanese animation, if at all you like Hayao Miyazaki's films and the Studio Ghibli set. See this movie. Very much worth it. And, you know, I'm not even saying to put politics aside, because it addresses it in a very regretful manner. So I'm saying The Wind Rises rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Gotta go to a break. When I come back, we're talking Pompeii and 3 Days to Kill.
Thank you.
It's the Fat Guy at the Movies. It's Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies coming at you from the magical studio in the sky. We're in the middle of the movie review segments for the Fat Guys at the Movies radio show. Today, we're going to be talking about Pompeii. Let's move into the big releases. Pompeii is a huge release, $100 million movie, directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, who's done a lot of garbage, but one of my favorite movies of all time, Event Horizon. Of course, he did that like almost 20 years ago. Come on, guy. You got to get with the program. Now he's doing an epic historical film. And this is, of course, about the true story from 79 AD about Pompeii. The ancient Roman city gets the Titanic treatment as a slave and a privileged man's daughter have a fleeting romance before Mount Vesuvius blows its top.
People of Pompeii! Let the games begin!
Slaves that live earn their freedom.
What is this?
It is the mountain. For all our strength.
Can you feel that?
We lived in the shadow of a greater power.
You notice in my description, I said it gets the Titanic treatment. This movie borrows so much from Titanic that it's almost shameful. Because, first of all, it's this epic disaster. As Titanic was, you know, this giant just ocean liner sinking after hitting an iceberg. This is, of course, Mount Vesuvius wiping out the city of Pompeii from the map. And you have this love story, the upstairs, downstairs love story. You've got the rich girl. You've got the poor boy. You've got the guy who wants to marry the rich girl, played by Kiefer Sutherland. And he has this most bizarre accent you've ever heard. He's a Roman senator trying to get her hand in marriage. And of course, they're trying to show their love to each other while they are, while this horrible thing's happening in the background. It is not as good as Titanic. Let me just put it that way. Just let me dispel any rumors right now. This is not even close to being as good as Titanic. It is in fact very cheesy. Kit Harington plays the lead. And while I don't watch Game of Thrones, I understand he's a big actor on Game of Thrones, and that's fine and dandy. But he really doesn't translate to the big screen as an action hero. He seems sort of, he's in good shape, but he seems very slight, especially up against Wadley, I think is his name, big long African last name, who plays another slave, another gladiator, who's like seven feet tall compared to Kit Harington, who looks like he looks like Zac Efron. From the High School Musical days, not where he's like beefed up a little bit for movies like The Lucky One. And also Emily Browning plays the girl. She's like the daughter of, he's either wealthy or he's in the government of Pompeii itself. She looks odd in here. And this is me. I'm going to get ripped on because I'm commenting on body issues with women. She looks like too thin. The last movie I remember seeing her in was Sucker Punch, where she played Baby Doll. She was highly sexualized in that movie, but she looked like a normal person. Here, she looks almost like she's lost too much weight. You know how you get that look? Jordana Brewster has this now, where she's lost so much weight in her body, her head looks too big. She's like this lollipop, where it's just sort of like this head's rocking on her shoulders. Anyways, it doesn't matter. The acting is really kind of terrible in this movie. And the characters aren't very good. They're not very well written. The story is kind of dumb. But let me tell you, Titanic was a good movie with good characters and a lot of good stuff that went on with this. But even if you didn't like the characters in the love story in Titanic, you have to admit, like, that last 45 minutes or so when the boat sinks is pretty freaking spectacular. And in this movie, when Vesuvius finally erupts, which you know is coming because if you have any sense of history, you know that the volcano erupts. If you have no sense of history, the poster has the volcano erupting on it. Even a cursory search, Pompeii, they've done Doctor Who episodes of this. You should know the volcano erupts. In the movie, they keep shoving these helicopter shots over the volcano. And they're like, it's going to erupt. They have these people saying, oh, that's the mountain grumbling at us. You know, that's Vulcan mad at us. You know that it's going to erupt. And when it does, it looks awesome. And I have to say, even though it was kind of a chore to get through the first half, the last half is all about big screen spectacle. It's not a particularly good movie, but it's a heck of a lot of fun to watch. I mean, it's as fun as it is to watch people getting covered in ash and lava. But I mean, it looks really cool. Unlike something like The Legend of Hercules or I, Frankenstein, when their CGI effects look kind of stupid, this one, the CGI looks pretty cool. And like I said, it's, if I were to say good, volcano movies, I would put Dante's Peak above this as a better volcano movie, but this is still really cool to watch. I, there's no two ways to say it. I can't say I was bored. I can't say I didn't like seeing it. So you know what? I'm going to give this a kind of rocks, even though it's not that great of a movie, but there you go. I'm easy on volcanoes.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Next movie we're going to be talking about is 3 Days to Kill. This is Kevin Costner in a bit of a comeback recently. You know, he had Man of Steel playing Jonathan Kent. He was in Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit, even though that didn't do very well. I thought he did a fine job in it. This is his new movie, directed by Mick G. Kevin Costner stars as a retiring spy who is given one last job to kill a terrorist while trying to reconcile his relationship with his estranged daughter.
You're the best agent for this job, Ethan. We need you.
I just want to spend a little more time with my daughter and my wife.
Why did you leave me and Mom?
There's no easy answer.
I was going to ask you to look after Zoe while I go to London for work.
I can handle it.
You have to make me a promise. Are you done? Are you really done working for them? You're sick, Ethan.
But I could offer you an experimental drug that might just give you your life back.
So I buy back my life by killing for you.
That's the job. You have 3 days to kill.
I blow hot and cold with Mick G. I think his Charlie's Angels movies were actually pretty good. Well, the first one, at least. The second one was a mess. But other movies like that Terminator movie was awful. This one's somewhere in between. There's a lot of influence from Luc Besson, who helped write the story and produced it. And that's cool because Luc Besson, as long as he's in his comfort zone, he does some pretty cool stuff. And this wasn't forced taking place in France the way, say, The Family was that came out last September. This has some very fun moments. It's neat to see Kevin Costner finding his niche again as a more mature, as a grown-up action hero, kind of doing the Taken thing. That's what, of course, Liam Neeson did. Kevin Costner works in this because he's had a rough career. He was like a heartthrob for a while. Then he wins the Oscar and he's trying to do serious pieces, which kind of backfired with The Postman and that kind of thing. And then he was trying to figure out what to do because he wasn't really a good guy. He could play a bad guy, so he played great characters. And he really had a slump through the 2000s. He's kind of come back with sort of the mentor roles, the father figures. And he can still play a badass. I got to say this. He did a pretty good job being the spy who kills people. And the movie's tongue-in-cheek. It has a lot of fun with it. There are some uneven parts. It has some real pacing issues. And Connie Nielsen plays his wife, who he's estranged from. And most of her scenes are just downright boring. And that's a shame because Connie Nielsen is a very fine actress and a beautiful lady. It's just that she's not given much to work with in this. With his daughter, Hailee Steinfeld, she does a good job in this. The real meat of this is sort of the action movie moments and the funny parts of it, the tongue-in-cheek and the humor. That's really works. Amber Heard plays his handler, and she is simply awful. She is basically playing an extension of the character she played in Machete Kills. I never quite understood this one. Most of the movie is, even though it's kind of over the top in action, it's relatively well grounded in reality and this sort of movie reality. Then they throw in Amber Heard, and like I said, it's like she walked right off of Machete Kills with the over the top ridiculous costumes and insane dialogue choices. So I wasn't a big fan of hers. I mean, I think she's a beautiful girl. Don't get me wrong. I would be very happy to get a lap dance from Amber Heard. So Amber, if you're listening, call me. But she's not a good actor. She's just a pretty face who sort of hacks her way through a movie. Still, it's an enjoyable film. Not a great movie. I'm going to say that 3 Days to Kill, like Pompeii, kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
With that, I need to go to a break. And when I come back, I'm going to be talking about box office. We have some listener feedback, more news, and the DVD roundup. are winding things down for Fat Guys at the Movies for another week, putting the show in the can. We've got a couple more things to talk about before we send you on your merry way. Let's start things off by talking about the box office. Was I correct? Last week I said the Lego Movie was going to win the weekend again, with about last night coming in a close second. I said $35 million for the Lego Movie, and wow, this thing just completely overperforms every single week. It made $49 million over the three-day weekend, $62 million over President's Day weekend, total of $143 million. This movie is unstoppable. It's insane, and for good reason. The Lego Movie is awesome. It's fun. I'm sorry. I know that's hyperbole. I know that I'm just keep dishing out love for this film. Such a great movie, holding on incredibly strong. About Last Night did very well for itself. It did $26 million over the three-day, $28 million over the four-day. Not bad for that movie. Coming in a lot higher than I expected was RoboCop, $22 million for the three-day, $25 million. For the four-day, that's kind of a shame because it's such a neutered adaptation of the film. Maybe RoboCop 2, the remake of RoboCop 2, will be better than the real RoboCop 2 that they made in 1990. Then you go down to The Monuments Men, which came in fourth. Endless Love did not do terribly well, $13 million, $14 million over the four-day. Apparently, the audience was like 75% women. I don't know where the rest of the guys were on this one. It wasn't a date movie, obviously. Then Ride Along was there, and then Winter's Tale came in with a really sort of depressing $7.3 million, just barely cracked $8 million over the four-day. What's funny is Frozen, which is the other Winter's Tale, Winter's Tale beat Frozen over the three-day weekend, but over the long President's Day weekend, with all the kids off of school on Monday, that's when Winter's Tale got beaten by Frozen. And it goes down, Lone Survivor, An Awkward Moment, rounded out the top 10. This week, I'm going to throw out another $35 million prediction for the Lego Movie. Why? Because it's so overperforming that now the $35 million that I suggested last week seems realistic coming off of $49 million. That's still only dropping, you know, like 30%, which is to be expected. I really don't think Pompeii has it in it to beat the Lego Movie. I'd be surprised if Pompeii even gets $15 million or $20 million. Same goes for 3 Days to Kill, even though I think 3 Days to Kill is more fun. I just don't see it getting a wide audience. And then, of course, you know, The Wind Rises and In Secret, those are limited releases. So those are going to be way down the list. Wind Rises is probably going to have a stellar per-screen average. But I think In Secret's just going to be lost. It's not a big enough release to really make it in the top 10. It's not a small enough to release to get these big numbers in the independent houses. So let's move on to a little bit of news catch-up here. There's two stories I wanted to talk about. First one involves Katherine Heigl. She has been doing a crowdfunding attempt. If you know what crowdfunding is, Kickstarter is the most famous one where it asks people to send in money and support a project. There's also a website called Indiegogo, which will help filmmakers fund a movie. Now, they've already shot this movie, apparently, that she's in, and she plays a lesbian in a relationship. So it's a romantic comedy, but it has I hate to use the term fringe, but the non-mainstream element of it being a lesbian love story. But now they're asking for $150,000 from the public to help complete the film, which would include editing and sound mixing and music and that sort of thing. Here's the thing. The numbers don't quite wash on this one. $150,000, that's really pocket change when it comes to a major motion picture with some name stars, because she's in it, Alexis Bledel's in it. So this is not just her little pet project, there are names behind this movie. In fact, Katherine Heigl could probably fund that $150,000 unless she wasted all of her money. She got paid like $12 million to do something like The Ugly Truth. She has become box office poison. Now, she hasn't become box office poison, she's become production poison. Nobody wants to work with her because she's a pain in the butt. That is the reality. And it's her mom or her manager. There's a whole story. You can look that up. The fact that her mom is a nightmare to work with, managing her, causing problems every day. Hollywood's very forgiving for stars that cause problems. But when the stars don't bring in huge numbers and make it worth their while, they're not too kind on that. Here's the problem with Katherine Heigl is I don't think this is about the money. Now, when you do an Indiegogo campaign or a Kickstarter campaign and you're just an independent filmmaker, you're using it to raise money to make a film, and that's great. You're doing it what the purpose is for. Now, with bigger movies and bigger names, you've got people like Zach Braff doing a Kickstarter campaign. I believe Spike Lee did one. You have, of course, the most famous one, Veronica Mars. those movies are not using that fund. They're not using it necessarily to raise money. They are, but they usually end up getting completion funds from the studios. Great example. Veronica Mars met its fund really early and actually exceeded it by, you know, like a 200% or something. And what that did is that said to the studio, yes, this is worth funding. There are people that aren't not just willing to pay and see the movie. They're ready, willing to pay to get the movie made. That shows real crowd and fan support. The fact that Katherine Heigl is in this movie, they're questioning whether or not she's really a draw. And instead of putting it through the movie and then spending the money to market it, they're saying, we'll do this crowdfunding for just a measly $150,000, which like Veronica Mars made in like 30 minutes. Let's see how many people are really interested in seeing Katherine Heigl in a movie. The reality is not very many. After 10 days, they only raised $25,000 of their $150,000. They have 35 days left. They're not going to get the money. What that tells the studio is not a whole lot of people care about Katherine Heigl. She's not the draw in the movies. It's just the fact that she does romantic comedies that people like. She's not like a Reese Witherspoon or a Sandra Bullock or a Julia Roberts. Katherine Heigl's career is over. This is going to prove it. You'll be lucky to see this on DVD. Next up, the story I want to talk about is James Franco wrote a story in the New York Times supporting Shia LaBeouf and his insanity that's going on. Now, you can go to the New York Times and find the article. Just search New York Times, James Franco, Shia LaBeouf. You'll get the full article. Here's a couple excerpts that I think are interesting to listen to. Because here's the thing. James Franco's kind of gone off the deep end on his own. He went to General Hospital and then he was, you know, he's done some crazy stuff. And other actors, as he points out in this article, other actors have done that. You know, Marlon Brando, you had Joaquin Phoenix doing his whole movie, crazy movie, I'm Still Here film, all that kind of stuff is not uncommon for actors to go nuts. But he kind of supports him and he says, maybe this is what's going on. Maybe he's not just insane. Couple quotes. This behavior could be a sign of many things, from a nervous breakdown to mere youthful recklessness. Another quote. Any artist, regardless of his field, can experience distance between his true self and his public persona. But because film actors typically experience fame in a greater measure, our personas can feel at the mercy of forces beyond our control. Well, booty hooty hoo. I'm sorry, Shia LaBeouf, that you have been given so much money to act in mega blockbusters and make out with hot girls on Transformers set. Oh, I have such a tough life. Oh, and people don't take me seriously. I don't care. Shia LaBeouf, grow up. This is okay when you're like 16 years old and you're being insane. It's not okay when you're in your 20s. You're being an idiot. I don't care if you have a lot resting on your shoulders. I don't care if you're the public face of movies. I don't care if you're the scapegoat. This is your career. Act like a grown-up because you are one. Deal with it. Oh my gosh, it's so tough to be rich and famous and all this. Oh, wait. I don't care. Shia LaBeouf, you're an idiot. You need to grow up and you need to get your stuff together. Anyways, you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. After that dressing down of Shia LaBeouf, I want to play this real quick listener voicemail. Didn't leave his name or his location. I'm just going to call him David because that sounds like a good name. And he's from Planet Earth, I'm assuming. So David from Planet Earth just wanted to give me a little bit of kudos on the show. No real question here. Just let's hear what he has to say.
I want to thank you for really putting out a good quality program. You're really focused on the mission, and that is movies. I'm back. Love the show, and I want to thank you for putting it out. Bye.
David had stopped listening. He came back. He liked some of the changes that we've made, you know, some of the trailer parks, being on focus with the movies and actually covering other things, not just the movie reviews, but also the trailers. And that's great. So thank you for calling in. Thank you for the kudos. I hope you keep listening. I hope we keep delivering a good show for you. Next up, we've got the DVD Roundup. All right, not a whole lot this week. It's actually pretty thin. We have Game of Thrones, the complete third season. I don't watch this show because I don't get HBO. I don't have time to get into it now. And I hear that it's all about just giant batches of nudity and dragons, but a lot more nudity than dragons. There's also Fantastic Mr. Fox, the Wes Anderson beautifully animated stop motion film based on Roald Dahl's original book. It already had a decent Blu-ray release when it came out a couple years ago. Now it's getting the Criterion release. Criterion always does a great job. They've done most of Wes Anderson's films. This is definitely one you want to pick up if you're at all a fan. Nurse Jackie season 5 is out. This is the Showtime series about the nurse who's addicted to pain pills, but she's a great nurse. You know, what are you going to do? Addicts and nurses. My aunt's a nurse. Recently retired. She never got on pain pills, but I guess that would be kind of a boring TV show. There's no stinker this week. It's just a really slow week for DVDs, so I think we're just going to wrap that up. Next week, we're going to be talking about Nonstop, Son of God, and my big fat Oscar predictions. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.